And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I'm down to dunk.
And I'm down to dunk. I'm down to dunk. This is J-Dub, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lindy Waters, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Mike Muscala, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Jay Will, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Kenneth Williams, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to dunk.
Will you say this is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort?
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schleck. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me, as always, on Mondays, is my good friend, Michele Ibarra. Michele, what's up?
My head is still spinning, counting the mistakes that OVC did from three against Houston. Clank. Yeah.
What a horrific game. I mean, it was, it's interesting because I think that Oklahoma City fans would look at, and I do this, and I think that a lot of fans do this too. We look at Houston and we look at Detroit and we kind of look down on them a little bit with the way that their rebuild is going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, them, both those teams beating us, it's just there to keep us humble, you know, just to, yes. You know, something in my heart is wrong. And that loss really kind of helped level me out a little bit because it was really bad. And I think that Houston fans could watch that Thunder team and be like, man, they have Shea and no one else is good. Like no one else on that team is good at all. That's how they
besides
played.
Wiggins. We have to say that he was great.
Besides Wiggs, man. Aaron Wiggins. Play Aaron Wiggins. Free Aaron Wiggins. Hashtag free Aaron Wiggins. Yeah.
Can you imagine if Wiggins in the postgame says, they're finally letting me play like CP3 2 years ago? That would be amazing.
That would be awesome. It would be
a hell of a moment.
It would be. Shoot.
I mean, I'm not so... I don't want to say mad because I never get too mad.
Yeah.
But I was impressed how different the shot quality was compared to the results. I mean, yep. OKC really generated a ton of good shots.
Great shots.
Houston didn't.
Yep.
I mean, Jalen Green took the most absurd shots.
Yes.
And he made them all.
Yes. That was the thing. And that's what the results don't match what you watch. Because if you would have taken everybody's shot and paused it right after they took the shot, and then like that's all you got to see, I think you'd be like, man, OKC probably won this game. Look at this.
By a mile.
Yeah. And you see Houston, like, oh my gosh, look at all these contested shots that are being taken. And that's what that team is built on, is just like these hoopers, you know, mm-hmm. in Houston, where it's like, I can go get mine. And I can do it with a hand in my face. And in fact, I prefer it with a hand in my face because it's so much cooler to shoot it that way. That's how they play basketball. And you'll get nights like that, you know. And for the Thunder, it just was a really bad night. And that's going to happen. And I had a tweet about this the next day where it's just like, listen, this is the youngest team in the league, second youngest team in the history of the NBA. You're going to have nights like this. Like you're going to have volatility within the team and within the way that they play. I don't think the defense was great. I don't think it was bad. I don't think they played with enough force.
Yeah, that's the point.
But, you know, it's just like a throwaway game. It's just like whatever, you know?
Yeah, which is part of the things that I don't like it. I don't want to excuse too much on a young team, but it's part of the deal. I mean, if you look at how Booker or the earliest version of Boston or even like other teams that now they are competing every night, even the Bucks with Giannis at the beginning when they got Jabari Parker and say, wow, they are stacked now. Yeah. Wow. And then, nope,
Not yet.
They're
not. Well, look at the Pistons. Everybody tried to do it with the Pistons this year. And
yeah,
I know,
but
Cade's
the
out.
Is just a bad team.
I know Cade's out. Want to. But like, even with Cade, they stunk. Everybody thought, oh, this is going to be a 38-40 win team. You know, chance to be 500. No, not.
Yeah, but even teams that now are good, and like when they were young, there were these games where you can just I'm throwing this away. Mm-hmm. But part of being a great team is getting on the court against Houston and destroy them.
Yeah,
because you can.
Definitely.
Physically imposing your will. I don't care if you don't have Şengün. Şengün can't grab 19 rebounds and can't score 21 points on you. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And I think that in some of the guys, there is this kind of personality. In others, maybe not. And I really want to see, I think that over the past week, Shea is starting to be fatigued a little bit. It's not the same defensively, which is normal. I mean, 20 games in, you start feeling the season, I think.
Yeah.
It's every other night, and it's heavy minutes every single night. So it's normal. And he was awesome in 27 minutes on offense. On defense.
Still amazing. Like, you're like, oh, he's tired, but amazing still.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but we can't deny that the first 6-7 games of the season, he was much more engaged, even if he's still blocking shots, stealing and right. But the physicality is not really there.
Yeah.
And I think that this will come.
It's going to ebb and flow. You know,
yeah.
Shea is still a young player. I know that it feels like he's established. He's still in pre-prime age currently.
Yeah.
And what he's doing is outrageous. And I know that people want to compare him to a player like Devin Booker or something like that. He has blown out of the water what Devin Booker has done, you know, at age 24.
Yeah.
Like, a lot better. So, yeah. I don't know, man. The sky's the limit with this kind of player that has the length, the way that he paces himself, the way that he can shoot from anywhere. His passing has gotten better this year. There's just so many things. And I want to spend part of this podcast just talking about his jump from last year to this year. And I pulled up. So we're 20 games in, and I think it's a good time to take stock of okay, who is this team? Where are they in the league? And then how do we compare it to last year? And that's what we're going to spend most of this podcast doing. So if we take a look at where they are 20 games in, they're 8-12. They're 23rd in net rating, -2, 21st in defense at a 112.8, and 18th in offense at a 110.8. If we look back a year ago, 20 games in to the 21-22 season, they are 6-14. So they're 2 games better than they were last year. They're 27th in net rating, -7.3 to a -2.
So that's very different.
It's a significant difference from last year to this year. The defense last year, 13th in the league at 106.6. Like, that's really good. And then OKC this year, 21st, 112.8. So the defense has slipped. And it's been that 112 is a result of great defense in the first 10 games and then a slippage in defense in the last 10. And then in offense, this is where we've seen a huge improvement, huge, bigger than the slippage in defense. Is their 18th in offense this year, 110.8. Last season, they were last in offense at this time, 99.3.
Yeah.
99.3. They're 10 points plus better per 100 possessions on offense from last year to this year, which is a giant leap. From 30th to 18th, maybe doesn't feel like a giant leap. It is. It's a very, very big leap. And then 10 points per 100 possessions better is kind of wild. And let's just talk about Shea, because he is he's a very different player than he was last year. Here's his stats 20 games in from last year. He played 18 games of the 20. This year he played 19, so the stats, you know, they're right there.
Same.
He's played one more minute per game this year than last year. Last season, 20 games in, he's 20 points per game, 5 rebounds, 4.6 assists, 1 steal per game, shooting 40% from the field, 31% from 3, 76.9% from the free throw line. This year, in 35 minutes per game, 31 points, 4.8 boards, 6.2 assists, 1.7 steals, 1.3 blocks, shooting 50, 35, 92. Unbelievable jump.
Yeah.
Shoot the free throws per game, 20 games in, last season, 5 per game, shooting 76%.
Yeah, that's insane.
This season, 8.8 free throw attempts per game, shooting 92.2%. The improvement is staggering. I mean, if you would have shown me, just a lot of Twitter accounts like to do this where it's like, here's numbers of player A, here's the numbers of player B, tell me who you think they are, you know? And if you put those numbers back to back, you'd be like, hey, this was Shea, first 20 games of last year, first 20 games of this year. I don't think you would be guessing like, oh, this is the same person that did these things.
It's insane.
It's outrageous. And it's not like that. And another thing that I want to highlight in this show is just like the talent difference and the guys that were playing these minutes last year. But it's not like there's just like this giant bump in talent. It's not like they acquired Bogdan Bogdanovic, you know, Bojan Bogdanovic, sorry, and had him, you know, added to this team.
If that is your big upgrade, that's sad.
I'm just saying one team tried to do that. That's what they did. This is me being arrogant again. But it's...
We'll pay this. You know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next game.
It's just an outrageous jump. So I just like want to recognize that first. From 20 points per game to 31 points per game in the first 20 games of each season is just it's a wild jump. And a lot of it's at the free throw line. A lot of it is that he's just making more shots. He took last season 17.5 field goal attempts per game. He's up to 21.3. He is one of the few players in the NBA that can take a team and just make them good on his own.
On offense, yes.
On offense, yes. The offense is outrageous. It's outrageous. This performance, if it holds, which it's an if at this point. I don't know that it will. I'm not sure. But I've also seen him get to 30 points over and over again without shooting the ball well in circumstances that are less than ideal. I see him continue to do that. I mean, what he did against Houston, where it's like, we can't get anything to go. And he was like, I'm still going to get there. I'm still going to get there. It's unbelievable. And the Thunder have been very blessed to have so many players to just have great seasons. You know, that we've had great Durant seasons, great Westbrook seasons. We've had an incredible Paul George season. This is on par with, like, it could be one of the top five individual seasons in the history of the Thunder, which is saying something. Like, this is the kind of season that he's having 20 games in. I mean, it cannot be understated.
Yeah. No, I think that the variety of ways in which he is getting his, it's impressive. I mean, we had moments where he could leverage his mid-range game, which last season he barely did in the first part of the season, which was one of the huge questions that we all had, like, why is he getting just step back threes and no mid range?
Mm-hmm.
And then basically in the second part of the season, he decided to go back to that, and it was insane. Yeah. I think that a steady diet of everything. I'm quoting Michael Cage. Wow. The fact that he can be a three level scorer is important, and he should not leave that aside. I mean, the mid-range game is part of every great scorer. Mm-hmm. There is nobody, even Giannis, who is not really a guy that should take any mid-range shot. He takes them.
Yeah, he takes them still. He's been horrible, but he takes them.
Terrible.
But yeah, I mean, according to Cleaning the Glass, the offense is 13 points better per 100 possessions.
Yeah. Which means basically that when he is on, OKC is more 120 points per game, points per 100 possession team. And when he's not, they are really bad. Bottom of the season bad, bottom of the league bad. I was doing some research on the first few games and the slippage in defense. I think the part of the deal is, as our friend in the chat, the cards, the pace is going way up and they are trying to adjust to playing at a very high speed, but also opponents are shooting better from three. Over the past 10 games, they are over 37% compared to 35, which is league average. And this will revert back to the mean. 2 points percentage on three-pointers is not a huge amount, but it can explain part of the difference.
Yeah. Yeah, they want to play as fast as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something that Mark talks a lot about. If they don't play well, he'll always talk about pace after the game. Like against the Knicks, the way that game started, I mean, I turned to Joe and just said, they're not playing fast enough. Like they're not going to, this is not their style of game. This is not the way they want to play.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that is a good point, is that they want to play really, really fast. You mentioned the threes from Shea last season. He took almost 7 threes a game at 31%. Yeah. This season, he's 2.9 at 35%.
Which probably they are both wrong, and he should be somewhere in the middle, around 4.5, something like that. Mm-hmm. And again, I said it many times. I need to see him taking spot-up threes. Mm-hmm. We need to see Giddy creating for him or others. I would like to see how many spot-up threes he took and who, from whom he got the pass, because I don't think that many are from Giddy, which is weird.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that way. I need to look into that later on, but yeah. Giddy is another one where it feels like Giddy's having like a regression to a degree. The stats don't say that, at least through 20 games. In Giddy's first 20 games of last season, Josh, he played all 20. He was 10 points per game, 39% from the field, 25% from three, 65% from the free throw line, 7 rebounds, 5.8 assists, 2.8 turnovers per game. So 10, 5, and 7. Or no, 10, 7, and 5. This year, he's 14, 7, and 5. The rebounds and assists are the exact same. 7.2 and 5.8, the exact same. Just kind of wild. The turnovers are up from last year, which matches the eye test. Some of it is scouting report, and that's something that just needs to be acknowledged. And he even talked about it, that like the book is out on Josh. And this is where you see, is a player good enough to make adjustments and overcome these things, or are they not? There's a lot of guys that get to year two and it's like, whoa, this is why there are sophomore slumps.
Yeah.
Is because teams have a full season to see everything that you can do. And there's a job, multiple jobs, where there are scouts from every single team coming to watch everybody. And it's impossible to not have like a good scouting report on somebody as important as Josh Giddey. And so everybody's got one. Everybody knows how to play them. And now he has to adjust. And I don't think he's been quite as bad as what a lot of people think. You know, he's 46% up from 39% from the field. Like, he's just shooting the ball better. He's finding better shots than he was this time last year.
Yeah. Do you have the number of mid-range shots he's taking right now?
I can pull it up.
Because I think that it's very, very limited to floaters.
Yeah.
If we stretch it, I mean, the mid-range was part of his game in the NBL in Australia. Mm-hmm. That part of his game was, hey, that guy has a short-range shot that looks good. Mm-hmm. And it was some of, and it was one of the weapons that he had last year. I don't recall him taking many this season. I would be surprised if those are one, more than one per game.
Yeah, he doesn't. You just don't see him take many like pull up mid range jumpers, and he would do that last season a little bit more.
Yeah,
in the mid range, he is taking 0.7 per game.
Yeah, and part of them are floaters, I think.
He is shooting 16%.
Yeah,
on those shots. Let me pull up the total, because that to me is total is pretty important. He's taking 12.
Yeah. Yeah, that matches the eye test. Those were a lot more last season.
Yeah. Yeah. Guess how many Shea's taken?
Oh, I think 2.8 per game.
80.
Okay, that's more than 2.8 per game.
Yeah, 46%. 80 mid-range shots. Yeah, wow. In the paint, non-restricted shots for Josh. He's taking 79 total.
Mm-hmm.
45%.
And yeah, it's not bad. It's not terribly bad. Should be better.
And then in the restricted area, he's taken 94 shots in the restricted area at 61.7%.
Which is not bad.
Yeah, it's not terrible. I can actually actually pull up what he did last year. Give me a second. I'll pull up exactly the shot
I think
diet
that
of last
shifting
year.
From mid-range shots, pull-up jumpers, to floaters and restricted area attempts, even if there are many times say, why did you have to turn? And I mean, he is working to get downhill. It's on purpose. Just shoot threes, floaters, and close-range shots.
Yeah. Yeah, last year he took, in 20 games in, he took 21 mid-range shots, shot 28%. He took 66 in the paint, non-restricted shots at 42%, so worse than this year. And then last season, 63 in the restricted area at 54%. So he's just like everywhere but the mid-range, he's better than he was last year.
Non-consequential, the mid-range percentage. I think it's long floaters and not jumpers.
Yeah, well, and there just wasn't enough for it to really matter.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, so few attempts that who cares?
Yeah.
I think that the slump hasn't. I'm reading the chat while we are discussing, and there is Jason Stewart saying that I think Giddy's slump has been grossly over exaggerated. I think so. I also think that this, the eye test says that whenever Giddy is on the court, the team looks not as good as when Shea is, which is an unfair comparison. And I think that is part of the reason why the perception is a little bit skewed. Mm-hmm. Because when Shea's on the court, the team is actually good against good teams. When Giddy's on, then it's probably a little bit how it was last season. So I think
Giddy's better this year, but he didn't make the jump that Shea did. And I think that is where we're seeing it. I think that's. I mean, I'm just saying what you said, but different words.
No. It's a nice summary of my too many, as usual, too many words.
I mean,
say a concept.
Yeah, when you make the jump that Shea did, it makes everybody else look a lot worse than they are, and it's hard to see the growth that happened. Mm-hmm. And this is part of why I wanted to do this exercise to see, like, okay, where are we really compared to last year? Because I think starting the season last year, I don't think that people would have said like, oh, Giddy was 10 points on 39% from the field 20 games into the season last year. No, I think people think, oh, Giddy was a lot better last year. That's wrong. Like that's just flat out, it's inaccurate. It's not correct. Mm-hmm. Does it look, I think we're more relying on eye tests there than we are on the stats with Giddy, because there is still like a little bit of like, I just don't know how this works long term. And one, it just doesn't really matter because this guy's still really young. He's still 20 years old. And so there is so much time to figure it out. But two, like, he is improved. He's a better player. Is he turning the ball over more than he did last year? Yes. Does that feel worse than last year? It does a little bit. But it's only one additional turnover. And
Which is not nothing.
It's not nothing.
Additional turnover.
It's not nothing. But I just think I would rather him make mistakes now and figure things out than to be more cautious. I think that I just think this is a learning experience for him. And if you just look at the raw stats, 20 games in last year, 20 games in this year, he is a better player. He is an improved player.
You know where I can see? I mean, you say that the rebounds and the assists are the same, which is kind of disappointing.
Sure.
Not because you can, I mean, it was the first 20 games. He was much better by the end of the season. And on top, his teammates are shooting the ball much better this year. Mm-hmm. So I really expected the assist number to be up, and it's not. Mm-hmm. The rebounds, I mean, there is arguably no center, and he should be way more involved in the rebounding department. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something schematic where he is not tasked with defending force or being as close to the basket in his scheme. Last year, there were not so many switches. This defense is probably a little bit hard to play. And so maybe these are the two reasons why Giddy's rebounds and assists are not as high. But you can say, hey, where is the passing wizards? His teammates are shooting the ball better. Why is not racking up assists like triple doubles here, triple doubles there? Giddy, like in New York.
Though I forgot to tell this story on the show. I'm glad you brought it up. I talked to Wally Zerbiak.
When he
was here, he was on the call with Mike Breen, and they were both sitting in front of me. Just, and that feels incredibly strange to have Mike Breen and Wally Zerbiak sitting,
and tempting, sitting, I imagine,
sitting right in front of me. I'm like, this is just unbelievable. Like, I feel like such a fraud with like sitting there, and those two are sitting in front of me. And so, anyways. I was standing in line for coffee at halftime, and Wally Zerbiak is just standing there right in front of me. And I just can't help myself. I just have to talk to him. And so I reached my hand out. I shook hands with him. He's got some big old mitts, by the way, some big old hands. I just said, hey, did you, you know, introduce myself, told him, you know, my name's Andrew, I work for The Athletic, you know. And I said, did you realize that you were going to be a Thunder meme, you know, after you had that post-game show? And he just started laughing. He's a very, very nice guy. And he was like, he's like, man. He started talking about how good Josh was in that game. And then he started to move his arms like he did on the broadcast as he's telling it to me. It was just so funny. But he was super nice. And I just couldn't help myself. I didn't get to talk to Mike Breen. He seemed very busy. He's also just like such a legend. And I was like, man, I just need to leave him alone. But
Breen feels too much.
It did. Like, it felt like too much. I had already got my interaction with Zerbiak. I was like, okay, I've had my fill for the night. But it was so much fun. Anyways, Josh Giddey is probably being unfairly maligned. Some of it by me, like, to be honest, just because the flow just doesn't seem there every night. Sometimes it is. The way he played in Boston, it was like, okay. Especially in the overtime. It was like, okay, that's it. That is it. Or is it the fourth quarter? Fourth quarter. Not overtime. The way he played
You were referring to the last overtime.
Yeah, no. The way he played in the fourth quarter, I was like, that's it. Like, that's the Giddey role. He's got to be way more physical than he has been. He's got to be a better rebounder, and he's got to survey the floor a little bit better and understand where the defense has figured him out. Yes. And like, those are the things he has to figure out. He has figured out how to use his physicality on the offensive end so much more. And that is a really good thing, because when he sees there's a smaller guy on him, he knows how to take him to the hoop and go get a bucket. And he's been very good at that this year. And that's a great improvement from him, because he really didn't do that last year all that much. And so, like, that's great. The other things, I just don't worry about, because I think that he's a smart enough player to figure out those other things. And it's just going to take more time and improvement. But all that to say, I think Josh is an improved player. You can see it in the stats when you look at his game and really think about where he was last year. It's like, yeah, a year later, he's just better.
Yeah. And I mean, even if you don't think that he will be better than this, you're down on him, blah, blah, blah. And like, put all the negativity that you want.
Yeah.
Still, he is a player that many teams would love to have coming off the bench.
Yeah.
You put shooting around him on every position. He's your off the bench playmaker. You put more shooting around Shea. Is this terrible for pick number 6? I don't think so. So even if you don't see him as a long-term starter with Shea, which is, again, very early, too early to discuss.
Yeah.
Even if you don't see a long-term starter for this team, I mean, thank God he's playing right now and getting all the reps that he can, because, I mean, even as a six-man kind of guy, is so interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, there are guys that are way worse than him, like Tomas Satoransky, that played a lot in the league as backup guards for even good enough teams.
Started for Washington.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that, again, Giddey will play in this league for a long time.
Oh,
and if somehow Engelin makes the magic in his shot in 2-3 years, I mean, we are talking a different animal. Because I don't think that the solution is to take away the ball from Shea's hands at all times. I think that there should be a mix in Shea's diet. Again, Cage. And but Giddey needs to be dangerous from the corners at least.
Yeah.
And if that comes,
they'll figure it out. Shea hasn't been this player for very long. And so, like, they just have to figure things out. I think that you almost have to, like, readjust the way you think about this team and the way that they gel together now that Shea has proven, like, hey, I'm one of the best 10 players in the league. Hello. Like, now figure out how to play with me. And Josh isn't the ideal partner, but Chet Holmgren is.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
for both.
And if you get both of them on the court, this is why I'm just like, just chill with any sort of like Giddey this, like, oh, he doesn't have a scalable of a game. Like, just stop it with all of that. Like, it's insane. It's not time to do that. It's not time. Not when he's 20 years old. Not when he is as brilliant as he is as a player. Not time. It's not time.
Yeah, I want to be greedy. We want to have everything soon and now. But it's... it's not like that, and it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
You can see when it works, you can see flashes of a great team.
Yeah.
And the fact that it works against anybody, even teams that are good and that are playing hard, and maybe against New York or Houston it doesn't, it's not so worrisome to me. Mm-hmm. So I mean, consistency is part of the deal. Mm-hmm. It's not something that comes for free, mm-hmm. that you're magically gifted when Chet comes back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also something where you put 2-3 veterans on the team when it's time. Teams that can, like players that can put the locker room straight together with Kenrich, and everything will work out.
Yeah. I mean, he's 5 or 6 years away. 5 or 6 years away from being in his prime.
For being the best version of himself. Yes.
So, like, it's foolish to make big judgments about him. You may be right one way or the other, where you're just like super homer and you think, like, oh, it's all going to work out. It's going to be amazing. You know, the Giddey Chet and Shea team is going to go to the finals. It's going to be amazing. Like, you may be right. Or you could say, Giddey's never going to work, not going to work next to Shea. They're going to have to deal him for some shooting or package him with picks to go get somebody else. That might be true too. Like, you might make the right read on it today, but to think that you know from what has happened that it's going to end up one way or the other, like, you just don't know.
No, and you'd be flat out wrong. The history of Giddy is not yet written. It's the final page will depend a lot on how OKC will build the team around Shea, Giddy, and Chet.
Yeah.
I really think that right now, the coaching staff is not putting an effort of putting neither Shea or Giddy in the best position to succeed. They are doing that with Poku to some degree. Maximizing Poku means playing him with better players.
Yeah.
I think that was something that we were advocating for last year.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, they did that. Was it wrong not to do it at the beginning? In the moment, I felt yes. Right now, I feel no, because you can always find a way to put a player in the best position to succeed.
Mm.
And I think that everyone knows what that situation is.
Mm-hmm.
It's too easy now. You don't want to make it too easy right now. You want Giddy to struggle big time in playing super fast and making quick decisions. Again, Filthy Cards was saying in the chat, hey, they are first in pace. Guess what? For a player that processes the game at such a high speed and makes all the dangerous passes, playing with higher pace means losing the ball more, which is happening right now. So I really think that we are not seeing the best version of Giddy, nor the best version of other players, excluding Shea, which is not put in the best position to succeed, but he's succeeding anyway. It's also like by construction. You really don't want to make it easy on them right now. It makes no favor to OKC if Giddy averages 22 and 9 and 9 this year. And then whenever he gets to the playoffs, he doesn't have an answer.
Yeah,
it's better for him to like try everything.
Yeah.
And then like with his time, he finds a way to be effective in every situation,
mm-hmm.
which is ultimately the goal of this team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our friends over at R-Thunder have sleuthed a little bit and found that Giddy liked a tweet that said, "Our own fan base hating on Giddy is so weird. LMAO." Pretty funny. So, okay, let's talk about Poku. You mentioned Poku. This season, he is 9.7 points per game, 48.9% from the field, 41% from three.
No, we should make rumblings. And 41% from three.
Can you believe that? That we're 20 games in. He's played 17 of them, and he's 41% from three. And that's just like, that is wild. This is better than my boldest prediction.
I mean, I think that you could have bet someone $1,000.
I think I could have. If I would have just said, hey, I'll bet you $1,000 20 games in that Poku is going to be shooting 39% or better from three. If I would have made that bet, I honestly wouldn't have made the bet. I wouldn't have done it because I would have just gone. I would have had to leave the pod and then go into the living room where my wife was and say, listen, I just lost $1,000 and I just want to say sorry, you know. No, I think it's crazy the improvements that we've seen from him. Five rebounds, 1.6 assists, 1.8 blocks per game to last season, where he's playing only 14.8 minutes per game. I mean, this year he's 23, he's playing almost 10 minutes more this season per game. And he was 4.7 points, shooting 34% from the field. From the field, 20% from three, 62% from the free throw line. Both are whatever numbers because he just doesn't shoot free throws because he's just not that aggressive of a ball handler.
He's getting to the basket way more than last season, though.
He is. He still doesn't like attack. Like, I would never say he attacks the rim, you know?
No.
I would say he greets the rim with a healthy smile, you know, with the basketball. Like, he does not attack the rim. Four boards, 1.3 assists, 0.4 blocks per game last year.
Yeah.
0.4 blocks per game. Some of that is
in the same situations.
Some of that is that he never was the lone center 20 games in. He was either a three or a four. And it
mostly
was
a three, though.
Yeah, he was a wing last year for the most part. Yeah, it's true. And
not great, Bob.
And he kind of stunk last year, 20 games in. This was the point where we're like, I think a guy that shoots 34% from the field, which there's only one guy that shot worse than him from the field last year, and that's Théo Maledon, who's shooting 22% from the field at this point last year.
How's Théo, by the way? I'm not keeping notes
of
his games.
He's playing, you know, which is good. That's more than I thought that I would be saying about Théo Maledon at this point in the season. I've watched him a couple times. He's had a couple good games. I don't know. Let me pull up his overall stats.
I'm looking at them.
48% from the field.
Wow.
38% from three. 5 points, 2 boards, 2 assists. That's great. Good for you, Théo.
56% effective field goal.
That's not anything to sneeze at there for a Théo Maledon. 85%
from the field. 86% from the line.
That's great.
It's great.
You need, nice. He needs, I mean, there are minutes. Take them. Do your thing. That's great.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
But the jump that Poku's made also from the first 20 games of last year to the first 20 games of this year, it again, you could put them, put their numbers up, player A, player B. The improvement is pretty staggering. And this is what happens. And this is why I'm like, don't make judgments about Josh Giddey. Because Josh could have a jump next year where it's like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Poku made a jump. Shea made a jump from last year to this year. And it's just like they're nearly unrecognizable from their starts of last year. And so this is why you don't make judgments either way. Somebody could have a fall like Tao did, where it's like, holy smokes, I thought Tao was a backup point guard, and now he is maybe out of the league. He got cut twice. Yeah. He got traded and then cut. But, I mean, the Thunder effectively cut him. You know, yeah. They made the trade. They ended up doing something good for their franchise. That's great. But they effectively were going to cut him, and then the Rockets cut him, and then he lands with Charlotte, and that's great. I'm glad he landed back in the NBA. I kind of thought he would go back to Europe, but...
Yeah, me too.
It's great. You don't know which way they're going to go. So, anyways, it's a huge improvement for Poku. It's very exciting. Of players that played last year, who do you think... So, it was Shea was number one in points per game last season, the first 20 games, 20 points per game. Lou was second at 16.8 points per game. By the way, Lou is shooting worse from the field than he was last year. He's 40% from the field. He's 42 last year. He's about the same from three as he was last year, taking two less threes per game than he was last year, which I'd say is an improvement for him. But he's about the same player as he was last year. Not a crazy jump here or there. Who's fourth in points per game last season for the Thunder?
No qualifiers?
No qualifiers.
I'm sure that both Giddey and Mann are above 10 points per game.
So it's SGA, Lou, Giddey is the top three. Who do you think is four?
I think that Trey Mann was above 10 points per game. I don't remember if Bazley was.
Trey Mann was 6 points per game. It was Bazley at 9 points per game.
6 points. Oh, the first 20 games.
Yeah, the first 20 games.
Oh, yeah. No. Sorry. Mann barely played.
Yeah.
And it was quite bad. I was thinking for the entire season. Sorry. Yeah. Not sure why.
Darius,
since we were talking 20 games.
Darius was third in minutes per game last year. Fourth in points, fourth in minutes as well per game.
He
played 28 minutes per game last year, 20 games in.
It was before the pining of Darius Bazley.
Yes. This year, he's 16 minutes per game, 6 points per game. So the biggest difference with Baze is just that he has been, he's just not where he was on the totem pole. Last year, he was like token starter, you know?
Yeah.
Token starter Baze. And he just is not that this year.
No. Rightfully so, if you ask me.
It's clearer to me, seeing what they're doing with the rotations and the way that they're handling him, that he is perhaps not part of the long-term solution here from the big position. They just don't treat him as such. They've given everybody else a chance to start and not him. And he doesn't close games. Even when he plays really well, he doesn't close games.
Yeah.
You know, last year, he played 69 games. Really nice number. And he started 53 games. 53.
Yeah.
He's played 15 games this season. He started zero times, playing 16 minutes compared to last season, 28 minutes per game.
A man-mouth feed.
He is better from the field than he was last year, 45%. He's better from three, shooting 37.5% from three this season. Not on a ton of attempts. Let me see what the attempts are.
Yeah, but look at the corners.
24.
I think that was intentional. He is taking a lot of corner threes compared to the volume, of course.
He's actually taking the exact same percentage of threes that he did his rookie season. 33% of his shots come from corners.
Okay.
He's shooting 50% on those too.
Yeah.
Which is a career high.
Yeah.
But still not a ton of attempts. Mostly just because he hasn't gotten the chance to do that this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's taken 24 threes. 9 of 24 from three. He was taking almost 4 a game last year. He's only taking about 1.5 this year. So
yeah.
He is being boxed in. He's boxed in Bays. And I think it's the right thing to do with a player like mm-hmm. him. I think that he is limited with the decision-making stuff, and that's okay. There's a lot of players in the league that are. A lot. And the Thunder right now are allowing Lu Dort to kind of work through that some.
Mm-hmm.
And there's times where Lu has had good games with his decision-making. There's times where he has not. But man, Bazley is in a different place. And I just wonder if we're, and I've said this a bunch, I just wonder if we're heading toward a trade for him, not only because he may not be long for the Thunder, but because I think Bazley has a long career ahead of him.
Yeah.
And he needs a situation where he's not playing 16 minutes on a rebuilding team and has like a 16-minute role on a good team where it's like, oh my gosh, look at what Darius Bazley can do for the Blazers or for the Mavericks or for whoever.
Or the Warriors.
Yeah, or for the Warriors. Great.
Corner and dunks.
Yeah, I think that he can have a really good career. It's just that I just don't know that it's going to be here because now at the big position, like you obviously have Chet coming back next year. You have Jeremiah, who's going to play minutes for them. You have Poku,
yeah, which
who's
going to play shooting minutes. Better. Jeremiah is so.
Oh yeah, yeah. Compared to he was shooting the ball pretty good last year, at least from three. He was 38% last year, but from the field overall, he's 50% from the field. Where last year Jeremiah was 44%. Like he's made a jump too, as far as mm-hmm. shooting the basketball.
Something on Bazley. Mm-hmm. I was looking to the. Tracking dashboard of the shots, and right now he's barely taking just wide open threes.
Yeah,
which is different from last season.
Yeah, he was trying a lot of stuff last year.
Yeah,
there was a lot of stuff going on with Bays last year, and
stuff that we loved.
Yeah, of course. Okay. Just comparing last year to this year, I just think the quality of players. I mean, you have Bazley playing the fourth most amount of minutes this year, it's J-Dub, where it's the 12th pick in the draft. Like, that's pretty great. You have Poku up there now, who has taken a leap and was a first-round pick. Last year...
What's your read on J-Dub, by the way?
I like his pace. I like the way he plays the game. I think the shot has a long way to go. I think the defense has a long way to go.
Yeah.
But I do like the way he plays the game. I think he is someone that can play multiple positions that can be very valuable to a team. You know, that's kind of where I'm at. I don't...
That's a bit vanilla, Andrew. I want something more.
There's not anything crazy flashy with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there is immense potential underneath all of this for him.
Yeah.
And part of me wants... Just some of it's covered up because he has to play like a lower usage role.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see him just as like the permanent backup point guard and just see what he can do. But they like him enough to start him. I mean, that says something. One, that he is...
Give him the reps.
Give him the reps with the good guys because we think mm-hmm. that he is going to thrive with the good players.
Yeah.
And be a connector piece. He and Poku as like the connector pieces within the offense. You know, there's a world where it's Shea, Josh, J-Dub, Poku, Chet next year in lineups where it's like all these connector pieces.
No Dort? Are you starting like to put away money to grab tickets for my train?
No. yes, no. There's just a world where that happens, and you just have all these connectors, all these decision makers on the court. I feel like that's what we're heading toward ultimately, is everybody can do everything. And that is an interesting, that's a really interesting group where J-Dub is your smallest player on the court.
Yeah.
And he's not a small player. He's got a 7'2 wingspan, and he is strong, and he's a rookie. So I'm very intrigued. I need to see more from him.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, you know, he's, the thing is, like, he from three, he's not great. Other than that, he's a pretty efficient player.
Yeah.
You know, 9 points per game. He's at three boards, almost three assists per game, only 1.5 turnovers, shooting 50% from the field, 28% from three, 87% from the line.
Like, yeah, 28 is not bad. It will come up.
I think it'll get better. And he only takes good shots, too, is the other thing.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, he only takes good shots.
It's funny that in your dream scenario lineup.
I did not say that.
I'm saying it could be.
It very well could be. It's a pretty great. I mean, you think about it, like, that's, it's kind of ideal. And it's also what they've been kind of working toward. They picked this guy in the lottery. They picked him in the lottery.
Close your eyes for a moment and think if one of the Thompson brothers actually, like, a
sit
guy
down,
like
J-Dub. Sit down, man.
No, you can sit down Poku and you have this crazy units with guys that can switch everything. I mean, it's true that we are looking at the scene and saying, oh, it's just Chet this coming next season. Maybe this is not good enough. Hey, we have next year's pick and we have a gazillion assets that will come in coming years. So take a deep breath. Look at the game against Houston. Think that this is not the team and they have so many avenues. Oh, it's part of this team.
Yeah.
And the fact that you already have a superstar in the making, that's home run. And even if it doesn't work immediately this year, even if they don't reach the 32 wins that I predicted, which are still in place, but not as much as a week ago or two, it's still good. These players are so young, and they have games where you see everything clicks and say, oh, there are moments where Poku has a block and then runs the transition and plays himself in the corner and he hits a smooth tree. I mean, those moments are the ones we say, yes, this is exactly how it should work. Yeah. I mean, Poku being aggressive everywhere, and they have moments in the game, especially in the third quarters, where they are everywhere. And this will be like this most of the time in the coming years.
Yeah.
If everything goes in the direction that OKC is going towards.
Yeah. Next, that's the thing. It's like, if we get too in the weeds with stuff this year, like, all the analysis, all the everything is going to be moot the first day of the season next year. Because, like, oh, wait, we're adding two big pieces to this. It is quite, I mean, it's going to be so different than this year. It's going to be so, so different. We haven't even seen Shea and Chet play together yet. Haven't even seen it happen.
Isn't it insane that we have it in our minds and they didn't share the court for one single second from the draft?
Yeah.
I mean, I can picture in my head, like, Shea dribbling and just doing pick and pops over pick and pop, and the defense can just, they will just die in that moment, because you can't double Shea if you know that Chet will hoist 15 trees a game.
Yep. That's the thing. Like, right now, teams don't have to make decisions within the Thunder offense, and yet the offense is 10 points per 100 possessions better than it was last year.
Yeah.
10.
And the best attribute of Chet is probably the fact that he will transform the defense into a defense that can switch but can drop, and right now they can't drop.
No. And you know what? It's almost like a stealth tank move that they just have no bigs.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, good. Don't get one. Don't do it. There's not worth it. It's not worth it to even touch that situation. Let it be. Let it be. Because yeah. if you add somebody else to this team, even if like you trade Bazley out, like you still need to get minutes for guys like Usman Jang. And there will be times within the season that they want to see what the other Jalen Williams can do on the court. And I would rather have minutes for those guys than like go get some run-of-the-mill center to just soak up minutes. Like, I'm sorry. I don't want that. I would rather see Jeremiah and Poku and everybody else play those minutes than anything else. I'd rather them lose games and get to, you know, the maybe fifth in the reverse standings, sixth in the reverse standings, and get yourself another player. I mean, even if you only end up where the Pacers were last year, you're watching the Pacers this year and you're saying, there are people saying, really smart people, saying that, wow, there's their backcourt of the future. And that, in fact, it could be the best backcourt in the Eastern Conference in the future. And it's like, whoa. And that happened like that.
Yeah.
And so, and this draft is all, it's a lot better than last year's.
Yes.
It is a lot better. I've watched a bunch of these guys and like, holy smokes. We watched Keontae George and like, where does Keontae go in last year's draft? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he would go pretty high. I think that you would have him in like the Keegan Murray, Jaden Ivey, Ben Mathurin range of last year's draft. And that guy's probably going to go eighth or ninth in the draft.
Yeah, depending on how he shoots the basketball, yes.
So, I mean, that to me is pretty wild. So there's a lot to be excited about as a Thunder fan. And like the thing to recognize is like this team is a lot better than they were this time last year. And like that's something to be celebrated. It's like, you can ask yourself, is the development working? I think you can trick yourself watching game to game. I think you can trick yourself watching that Houston game and saying, oh my gosh, no one has improved. It's only Shea. What's going on with our team? You know, and the answer is like, there's been a lot of improvement throughout the team. Yeah. There's been an infusion of talent. You've had players like J-Dub has made an instant impact. I think Poku is a lot better. Trey Mann is definitely somebody who's struggled.
Yes.
He's also had a back injury. And back injuries are...
Something is wrong with him.
Really bad.
He's getting back, though.
Yeah. I think Aaron Wiggins is better this year. I think Jeremiah is better this year. I think Usman Jang is obviously a long-term project, and I talked about that a bunch on Friday. That's another guy. We didn't even discuss him. He was picked 11th in the draft. Yeah. Like, this is somebody that could be significant to the team, and we're not even talking about him because it's going to take time, and he could have a Poku-like trajectory where it's like you're two or three seasons in, you're like, where is this guy? And then he just shows up.
Blossoms.
So
into something good.
Yeah. So all this to say, all this is about this show, if I could sum it up, it's like the Thunder are better than they were last year. They have a certain star on their team where last year we didn't know. Shea was 20 points per game shooting 40% from the field this time last year. That's not a star.
We were questioning.
We were questioning a lot of things.
Where did he go?
Yeah. And like, oh my gosh, like we got to go find the best player for this team. Now he's 31 points on 51% from the field. Things changed fast. The NBA changes fast. Doesn't mean it's going to all change to be good. I don't want everybody to think that. Like, oh my gosh, Josh Giddey next year, 25 points on 51% from the field coming our way. Like,
you heard it on Down to Dunk first.
Hey, that might happen. I don't know. The truth is, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But I can say that with such a young team, you can know this for certain. Things will change. Things will be different. This time next year, things will be very different. So this is why I keep saying, like, it's not time to make judgments. Don't make sweeping judgments on this. This is a young team. Like, just wait. Things are going to change. The minute you think you know something about this team, it will change. It will change. So, all right. Thanks so much for listening to our show. We'll have another podcast for you on Wednesday with Alex Spears. The Thunder play the Pelicans tonight, which should be an interesting matchup. Somebody earlier in the chat said that we have Poku versus Zion tonight. That we do. How in the world? I mean, obviously, this is not a... You can't guard Zion one-on-one. It was Evan Troy in the chat. You can't... You have to use lots of players to guard Zion. Truth is, the Thunder don't have, outside of Eugene, have a player that can really guard Zion. So I'm very intrigued. It is just the Pelicans are a weird team. Mm-hmm. They're a weird team to defend. I think Ingram is questionable
tonight. Also McCollum.
And McCollum's out in the South and the safety protocols. So it should be interesting. I don't know what to expect tonight, honestly. After that Houston game, I think you could predict an easy loss. Also, the way they've played on the road this year, I think, is an issue. They are currently 3-7 on the road. They're 5-5 at home. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly a thing.
But they also had good games on the road against Boston.
Played well against Boston. They could come out and win tonight. They could go and win tonight. I wouldn't. They would not shock.
Against Washington, it was a great game.
Yes.
We'll see.
Just don't know. I don't know. All right. Thanks so much for listening. We will talk to you guys again on Wednesday.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.